With over 30 million people in the U.S. fighting a rare disease, we can't ignore the effect this has on all of us. Often we feel society defines us by the disease instead of who we are as a person. Join hosts and advocates Anne and Seth as they navigate topics impacting these communities, as well as guest speakers with their own rare disease expertise. Rare Unplugged is about to get real.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? It's Seth here. It feels so weird doing the introduction since it's usually Anne who's doing it, but we decided to switch it up.
And you're so good at it.
So, aren't I? I'm great, except I wasn't, you know, prepared to, I don't know, just be like, hey, everyone, it's Seth. What's up?
What's up, DC? I know. I always feel weird kind of doing that because I'm like, hey, how's it going?
This is why
we need a live audience.
I know. Maybe I should just like get one of those recordings with like the, where you tell someone to like applaud, and then it's like, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Seth and Anne, you know, and then just boom.
I like that. Let's do it.
Yeah. I'll have to work on that like introduction voice.
Right? Like I want it like WrestleMania type introduction in this corner, like stuff like that.
I could do that. I could try. We'll see. Maybe a near future.
Perfect. Episode. I like it.
Yeah. But let's get into it. So today, what we're going to discuss is the idea of genetic testing. This is actually going to be a two-part series where this first part, we're going to dive just into our thoughts on genetic testing and both of our backgrounds of, you know, going through it, the process. And then part two, we're actually going to be speaking with a genetic counselor who has a different perspective, different view on the importance and knowledge of genetic testing from that standpoint. So I'm happy to get this going. And I believe, Anne, you have gone through genetic testing similar to myself, but did you go through it after your son was diagnosed?
Yeah, so I got tested about a year and a half after he was diagnosed. And it was actually just kind of random. I had taken him back to Iowa for a conference about his disease, and they do the bulk of the research on atypical HUS there. And they were kind of in the middle of a study, and so they were testing a lot of other family members. So that's how I did it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been covered, and we didn't want to pay out of pocket. It's about $3,500. So I'm the only one that's been tested besides Ethan, but I did it. And sat around for months waiting for that test to come back.
Now, what happens if you tested positive? How would you, do you think that would have changed your perception on life or how you kind of live your life?
Well, so
day?
I did test positive.
Oh, yeah. Right.
No, sorry. You're good. You're good.
I think
we talk to everybody, so I get everyone confused on who's tested and whatnot. So I remember I tested positive. And one of the first things I did besides feeling a terrible mother for passing it on was I called his case manager, mostly because it would be interesting information for her to have. And then I kind of was like, well, like, what do I do with this? Because I'm not symptomatic whatsoever at this point. And so for me, I mean, it doesn't bother me. I don't think about it just because I just am more worried about him. But every year when I get like my annual blood draw and stuff, like we just test all of those specific labs that he was either dropping or they were too high, just so that we have kind of a base, like a marker. So if something ever were to come up a little bit weird, we could look back to see what the, you know, what it had been for however many years prior.
Yeah, I think the reason why I forgot that is because, at least as far as with Huntington's disease, it's the parent who starts showing, you know, signs or symptoms first, where in your case, obviously, Ethan was having some, you know, daily challenges, which led to his diagnosis, where you haven't necessarily showed symptoms yet. So I guess that's kind of why I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot you tested positive, because I feel like it's always like the reverse,
sure,
you know?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, and as far as it changing my outlook, I mean, honestly, like, I don't worry about my own health because I'm just in the mode of taking care of him. But it is more than likely that my girls have it just because of the way this was passed and the way ours was passed. So, like, that worries me. But we'll deal with that down the road. And I mean, that's something we can talk about later. But, you know, that's one of those aspects of testing. But you tested positive, obviously, for Huntington's. So I want to drill your brain about that.
Yeah, let's do it. No question is too personal because I've heard it all these days. And I always tell people after I do a talk, I say, listen, ask away. I don't take anything too personal. And as soon as I say that, everyone's hand goes up and they ask me everything. And I'm fine with it because I think I just got used to being okay with answering questions, because if I can answer anything, it's going to educate those that are interested in knowing or learning.
Sure, sure. Okay, so I've heard your TEDx talk, and I mean, I know your story really well, but I'll probably forget something, so I shouldn't say that. But like, I guess really my first thought would be, if this was, you know, a story I'd heard in the beginning, was for me having, like, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and you watched your mom pass away. Now, Seth, I can't remember. Did you get tested before or after your mom passed away?
I tested before she passed away.
And did you get your results before?
Yeah. So I tested at the age of 20. I went through a different protocol than how most people do it, but I also never wanted my mom to find out. Luckily, she didn't. But that also made me think as a 20-year-old that I can't tell my family. So it actually took me, even though in my TEDx I say it took me 2 years, I actually thought about it after the fact and realized it was actually three years until I actually told anyone in my family.
So what I was thinking about too is, you know, years ago when I was at the Global Gene Summit, I can't remember her name, but there's that film that she did, like The Lion's Mouth Wide Open or something.
Yep.
I can't remember. It's going to like kill me now that I forgot that. But she was talking about her process of getting tested. So I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and you're watching your mom go through this and you decide to get tested. Like, were you terrified? Like, what was higher, your fear or just of finding out or just wanting to know? Because I don't know that I could do that, quite honestly.
You know, what's interesting, Anne, is I think it was just, I wanted to know. I like to plan out. I wanted to know what my future held. But I've also talked to friends and family who aren't at risk for a genetic disease. And a lot of them are like, yeah, I would test right away. And I don't think that they truly understand. And it's nothing against them, but understanding when you see a loved one, a parent especially, going through a slow decline and getting worse and worse and realizing that you could end up just like that, it's very scary. And it's frightening to know if that's true or not. Now, most people will say prior to testing that they believe they already have it. And so even those that test negative sometimes, and I think I mentioned this in the previous episode, they have that obviously survivor's guilt, but that's because they're like, oh, this is wrong. It can't be right because I feel like I'm showing similar traits as my mom or dad, and maybe I should get tested again. But for me, I think even when I tested positive, I was still in shock because there's a difference between thinking I'd have it and then actually having it and having that piece of paper that is evidence saying I tested positive and realizing I could or I will end up like my mom one day.
So yeah, and that was going to be my next question. Did you, going into the testing, did you feel strongly one way or another if you were going to be positive or not?
Yeah, I just feel like I always had it. I don't know what it was. And I've talked to people who've tested negative and they go into it with that same mindset of, yeah, I already have it. I think I already have it.
You're probably preparing for the worst, right? Type of thing.
You prepare for the worst. And then I just feel like as people, we tend to overthink everything. And so if we drop something or you know, trip over something or a similar trait to our parent, then we automatically think that has to be the disease, even though I've had friends who've tripped over or dropped something as well, and they have no genetic disorders in their family. It's just, I think it's just a mental.
Yeah. Thing. So, okay. So I have a question and a statement. Okay.
Perfect.
So when we were going through, one of the questions for us when we were thinking about getting our girls tested, and I know this has come up in our community a lot, and we had a really good physician say at a conference, as far as testing your other children, if they, so with our disease, the mutation does not guarantee symptoms. Okay. So it's different than some genetics. So she had just said, if your girl, basically like in a nutshell, if your child is going to test positive for this, even though they're not showing symptoms, are you going to treat them like they have the disease? You know, are you going to automatically, you know, some of that thought process of like, oh, what is this? And like you said, tripping. So for me, every time my girls get the stomach flu, I automatically go into panic mode because that's how Ethan started, which it always ends up being the stomach flu, which is fine. So, but my question is, do you feel that A, you are treated differently by maybe your close friends and family? Do you feel like they treat you like you have it? And then the second part of that question would be, do you feel like if you do trip, are you just like, oh, clumsy me, Seth? Or is there something in the back of your mind that is like flashing, like kind of like that panic, like, well, could it be this? What if it's Huntington's? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, for part A.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I remember when I, you know, I told some of my close friends when I did test, and then over time told a few more, and now it feels more ingrained in me that I am comfortable telling people. However, I remember one of my friends said, when I told him, he said, hey, Seth, you know, I'm still going to treat you as Seth. I'm not going to treat you any differently. And that's something that to this day I always will remember, because that's exactly what I was hoping the response would be from everyone.
Right.
But I've also told people and they didn't know how to react and it pushed me away, or they would like text me every morning and ask me how I'm doing. I'm like, I'm great. How are you
right.
doing?
You're like,
you know, I'm having a great day. I'm staying busy. I just had my coffee. Yeah. How's things
because
you?
your slip a piece of paper that said positive didn't make you sick the next day type of thing. And they probably went to automatic, like, he's positive. Are you okay, Seth? Like, would you need me to come over? Are you all right? So is that frustrating?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was. And I eventually told them, saying, hey, like, I'm not going to change overnight. And they didn't appreciate how I said that. But at the end of the day, that's that. As for part B, which I'm trying to remember what that question was.
So if you do something, say you trip, do you just think, oh, right. I'm ridiculously clumsy today? Or do you have a fear in the back of your head that it's a symptom?
It really depends. I feel like sometimes I just think, oh, that's CHD. And other times I'm just like, oh, I dropped it. But I do sometimes get mad at myself, because I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have dropped it. I shouldn't have tripped over. But there's also other times, as crazy as it sounds, that, and I don't think this is the HD at all, but, you know, I was at like a bar with a friend and I had like a beer, and then they like tried to cut me off. They're like, oh, you're drunk. And I said, I only had a beer. Like, and I had to explain to the manager that, you know, I wasn't drunk or anything, and that was fine. But like the fact that that happened, that got me angry, because I was like, my friends are like, even said, oh yeah, he's okay. Like, he's only had a drink. And so hearing that and just people just assuming things is also can be kind of, I guess, a low blow to my self-esteem or my confidence, or just making me not feel the greatest. Because it is mentally impactful every day just to think, okay, is this a symptom or is this just me being clumsy?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that would make sense. And that's got to be hard to focus or like not, because I'm sure there's some people that would really have a hard time separating and they dwell on the what if. And I think that's more like that's more my mindset is that's half the reason I haven't got my girls tested, because I feel like I would unintentionally treat them like they were maybe sick or be a little bit more like cautious. And I don't want to be the helicopter cautious mom because I've already done that with Ethan and I'm like trying to pull back. So yeah, I don't want to do that to them. So that's good to know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I wanted to discuss what you mentioned before regarding, you know, having kids and when you tested positive, because you obviously didn't know until after Ethan was diagnosed. But if you knew that you tested positive, like, would you have had, obviously, like, your two girls as well? Or do you think it would have, like, kind of changed your perception of how you wanted to have kids and family planning?
I've been asked that question before, and it's hard to answer because I'm past that point. But knowing how this disease works and with our specifics of the mutation, yes, I still would have went ahead and had more children. Because with our disease, the mutation does not guarantee that you will actually ever get sick or have symptoms. So it's a toss up, you know. And, you know, I may have felt differently when I was younger and trying to make those decisions. But I think, you know, where I'm at now, I feel comfortable that I would have said, no, that's okay, because nothing's a guarantee. And I think, you know, even learning more about other diseases, you realize that nothing's really a guarantee. I mean, if you look at Ethan, he was perfectly healthy. This came out of nowhere. And I think there's a lot of things that come out of nowhere. And so for me, I don't think that would have changed my decision to have additional kids after him, like if he had tested before. But, you know, severity is even within our own disease are different and make that decision trickier for others. So I don't know. I think it'd be okay. But like, can I ask you, what about you? Like, how does that in, I mean, you're a young single guy. How does that in Seth needs a date. So call him 867-5. No, I'm just kidding. You don't even know that song. Whoa. That's what's sad. oh my gosh. I'm gonna make you a playlist of good 80s songs. Anyway, does this factor into you when you are dating? And we kind of talked about this a little bit with Gunnar a couple of podcasts ago. So I want to know, at what point do you say to a date, P.S. I have this and it means XYZ? And then how does that influence your decision as far as, you know, like planning for the future, kids or whatever? I don't know. Maybe you don't even want kids because they're crazy, Seth.
I know. Maybe I should just get a dog, like a dog farm, and just enjoy that. No, I definitely want to have kids or have a family. I mean, I think with the disease, it definitely has made me feel like I have to speed up time and that I'm always racing against time. So even though, yeah, I am 27, almost 28, I feel, one, that I have an old soul. So I just, you know, I also matured faster than my friends because of dealing with my mom every day and having additional responsibility. And I'm at the point now where I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to settle down, but it has to be the right person. It has to be a good fit. The tough thing is, when do you tell them? Do you tell them on that first date? Do you tell them second date? Do you tell them 2 months in? For me, I've tried it all. I've told them prior to dating them. And then
does it scare them away?
Didn't work out. I told them.
Okay.
It has. Yeah. I mean, it definitely has. That's the thing. Like, I don't also want to be defined by the disease, but it's also a part of who I am in a way, where a lot of the work I'm doing in the rare disease space, a lot of the work that I do in Huntington's disease is probably also because not only my mom testing positive and having it, but also that I tested positive and I have friends who have tested positive, and I have a lot of friends who are impacted by a rare disease or chronic condition. But it's always going to be a part of who I am and the type of work I do. And so that is really challenging because I have had trouble because of being pushed away from girls who didn't understand it or didn't know how to react to it. And I'll be honest, it's taken quite a blow to my self-confidence. But on the other hand, what I've also learned and noticed is within like the Huntington's disease community, connecting with people, it's a lot easier because I don't have to explain myself. They don't have to ask questions because they know what's going on. But it's also tough because you don't want to, I guess, mix business with pleasure, per se, if that makes sense. Because you might end up seeing them at other conferences. It may not work out. And it's tough because I've also, I'm like, well, what happens if they have HD? I don't want them to then not have anyone to take care of them, or I don't want them to take care of me if I get sick first. So that's a whole.
Oh my gosh. Aspect, I didn't even think about that part, Seth.
Yeah. So that's a whole other thing is, and I've had talks with like friends about it is who are part of the Huntington's disease community. And they're like, well, you shouldn't think of it like that, but it's truly tough because again, seeing my dad as a caregiver for my mom and having another, I guess, family friend who is a caregiver for her husband and her daughter who had the juvenile version. I know it takes a toll on a person on that caregiver. And I don't want someone to have to do that for me, especially my loved one, or I want to make sure if it is my loved one, I want them to have a caretaker of some sort. So
gosh,
it's tough.
Gosh, Seth, now you got me like all like worried and down and there's a lot of this thought process. And I know that, the diseases are very different and different outcomes. But at the same time, I'm like, can you please talk to Ethan in like, well, let's see, he's 14. He's not allowed to date till he's 40.
That's what you think.
But no, but literally, like, I feel like this is a conversation that I would love for you to have with him when he hits that dating age, as far as, you know, like, how to handle this, because it is a big part of the conversation.
Yeah, it's always going to be part of the conversation no matter what. It's funny because, you know, I've done a TEDx talk. If you Google my name, you're going to see something about Seth and Huntington's disease.
Right.
So there's no way of getting out of it. And I'm okay with it at this point. But that's what I also tell people is, you know, once your story's out there, it's out there. But I think having a romantic relationship can be challenging because you don't know how they're going to react. You don't know what they're going to say or how, and you also have to understand that just because you connect with them with a similar interest, such as having a rare disease or being impacted by a rare disease, doesn't mean that you're still like, it's still a good connection. I mean, I felt that way. I'm like, oh, I can talk to this person for hours. And I realize it's because all we're talking about is Huntington's disease, where it's important to have other common interests.
Well, that was I was going to ask you too, because if you look at, and this is, you know, going outside of rare disease, but like I look at like celebrities within different industry areas, music or film, like sometimes they date within their industry, but sometimes I like the ones that they'll say they'll go out because it's something different. So I can see that you maybe want somebody not necessarily so involved just because your conversations are different, you know what I mean? It's not always focused on that or something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree 100%. And that's why you can never settle, even if it feels so good. You just have to kind of just be patient and not force it. Just kind of let things happen. That's what I've been trying to teach myself and trying to learn over time is you can't force it if it's not there. You just kind of have to let it happen. And I am a true believer everything will happen for a reason, but it is definitely, it's tough because I also have friends who are getting married. I was at a wedding last week and I have another wedding coming up, and you know, I have friends getting married, friends who have kids. And so it's making me think, like, I'm at that point. And I also, my friends are like, oh, Seth, you're going to be the first one to get married. I'm like, ha, joke's on you now. I don't even have a girlfriend.
But I have to point out, though, I think it's funny when you said if they Google your name, because that's like the thing now. If you're going to date somebody, you totally like online search them. And can I just say that when I was dating and before I got married, Google didn't even exist.
Yeah, you were probably like,
no, I mean, there was no way to do that. I mean, I didn't even get a cell phone until I was like a sophomore or a junior in college. And it was like a little flip. There was nothing. I can't imagine. Like, I mean, I watch like my nieces and stuff that are, you know, in their 20s dating and everything. And I don't know. So you cannot hide from yourself. You've put yourself on Google. So now good luck.
Exactly. And even before that, like the whole dating scene is different now. I mean, you just hop on a dating app, you connect with them. And I personally very old school. I'd rather meet someone in person or through a mutual friend. It's so much easier versus messaging back and forth and then trying to meet up with them and be like, am I gonna think your friends are cool? Yeah. Are you gonna think my friends are cool? Like, you know, I like sports and you don't. This is awkward.
I feel like maybe there should be at one of these conferences, we should have like the speed dating. Or like the dating game, or like we can like auction you off as like the Bachelor or something. I don't even know how any of those work, but I don't know. Like maybe this could be like a new trend. track five.
We're gonna just auction off.
We're gonna start the bidding for Seth at $100. I don't know. So, I don't know. We'll try to get you like $500 or something. Pay.
Yeah, and then it all goes back to,
there you go,
like the cause or whatever. It goes back.
All right, who else can we throw up on the auction block? I like this idea. This is not going to happen, but it's going to entertain me for like the next hour thinking about how this all would work.
you like, I got it all
planned out. Nothing's going to happen, but I've got it all planned out.
I know. I can't wait to see the plan, but yeah. The other thing that's been a huge debate that I've seen a lot, at least within the Huntington's disease community, is the idea of if you know that Huntington's disease runs in your family and whether you're at risk or you tested positive, should you have kids? And this has been a big debate because obviously I wouldn't be here if my parents didn't have kids. A lot of people wouldn't be there if their parents didn't have kids. But now that I know, part of me is like, I don't want to have kids that way, like, I guess naturally, only because I know that if it comes from the father, it's more dominant, which means there's a higher risk of having a juvenile version of Huntington's disease. And I also don't want, again, the whole idea of, you know, a caretaker, a wife taking care of me and then potentially taking care of my child or our child too. But on the other hand, you know, there are other people who are like, hey, well, anything could happen. And I get that. And I don't tell anyone what they can and cannot do. I think it's a personal decision. But what are your thoughts when it comes to that? I mean, do you think if you were to grow up seeing a parent slowly get worse and worse, would you want to naturally still have kids? Or would you think of like a different,
you know, honestly, I don't think I have an answer because I don't even, I can't even put myself in that frame of mind. I don't have any experience to think of what that might be like. The only thing I can think of is, I mean, I've had 3 kids and every time I've been pregnant, you know, they offer different testing to see if there's, you know, different things that they can tell while you're pregnant. And I have declined that testing every time just out of my basis of, the baby is going to be my baby no matter what, you know, regardless of how it comes out and, you know, whatever it has or doesn't have. So, I mean, you know, that's always been my mindset. But with the genetic thing, I mean, I don't know. I think it's different. I think it definitely makes you take a second look as far as, you know, what you're really, I think what you're doing is you're trying to prepare for the future. And I don't know, I think you probably have to look at things like that rather than just be so, I don't want to say careless, but just so nonchalant about, okay, yeah, we're going to have kids. You know what I mean? There's probably a bit more thought process put into it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have an answer because that's really hard. And like you said, it's so personal. I mean, even within our disease, the mutation does not guarantee symptoms, but we see a lot of the same questions of, will you have adult patients? Are they going to have kids? Do they want to potentially, just for that potential, because they've lived through it, do they necessarily want to pass that down to a child? Yeah, I don't know. It's hard.
No, it definitely is. And I actually went to see a genetic counselor about my options because I knew about like IVF in vitro, and then there's PGD on top of that. But that's so expensive. And then there's like, I could get sperm donation or I could adopt. And one thing that I started thinking is, okay, well, what are the options? I mean, in the UK, you get 3 free IVF cycles before you have to pay. In Canada, it can cost anywhere between $10,000 to $15,000 per cycle. But, you know, there's some clinics or some areas in Canada where it may only cost $6,500 per cycle. Yet in the US, on average, it's about $12,000 to $17,000. But that's before medication, which is another $3,000 to $5,000. And then there's PGD, which is another $3,000 to $6,000. And then there's frozen embryo transfer, which is, you know, you store it for future use. And that can cost $3,000 to $5,000.
You are very knowledgeable in this area, Seth.
I just started doing research. I started doing research on it because, you know, what's crazy is that they said by 2022 that the IVF market size is projected to reach $27 billion.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I mean, I
billion, but that, that's oh, insane, I know. Though, and like the because the rate is about 40%, yeah, 50%.
Yeah, I've had lot of friends that have done it. I mean, they have spent thousands and thousands of dollars. I mean, I've gone to fundraisers and auctions and stuff to help them, you know, raise money for this, and it's just, I mean, yeah, that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, I mean, it, and I think what's frustrating for me in that regard is it almost doesn't help you make decision. It almost limits some of your decisions just because some of those things are not financially plausible for some people, you know, so that almost takes away some options, which is really sad.
I totally agree. And the only reason why I did my research on this is because I'm always going back to the idea of policy and making changes, especially within the healthcare system of the U.S., which could be a whole different debate. But that being said, you know, getting organizations that are impacted by like a genetic disorder all together to even develop a policy or add on to a different policy. So even making one, you know, you get one free cycle of IVF in the U.S. just to help cut down costs. Because if you think of the long-term cost-benefit analysis, you would think that it would also help improve, like, health insurance companies as well, along with, like, other, you know, organizations. But it's something that I would love to, like, get all these organizations on board to say, let's make this change and let's look at how it works effectively in the U.K. and let's see, even if we break down the cost a little bit like they do in some places in Canada, it's saving people money. It's saving, you know, I would say health insurance and money, you know, or insurers money as well. But it's really just building up that coalition and making change. And sure, I know that's a whole nother story, but yeah.
No, I love it. I agree. So do you feel, I mean, your life has obviously taken a very specific pathway since you were tested. And with your results, I know this is like, seems like an obvious question, but do you ever, like, are you happy with your decision to do that? Do you ever wish maybe you never was tested, you know?
I am definitely happy with the decision because I guess in my case, it kind of helped motivate me to live life in the moment and to plan my future accordingly. But I do wish that I went through it the proper way, which is seeing a Huntington's disease like neurologist who's educated and a genetic counselor, which I didn't get a chance to do. And I think genetic counseling, which we'll talk more about on our next episode, is just very valuable. It's someone who can help teach you and understand, like, okay, what are your options if you test negative? What are your options if you test positive? How are you going to feel about it? You know, how do you get prepared prior to testing? Things like that. And I think I just missed out on that. Like I said, I went to see a genetic counselor 7 years after, or 6 years after testing to learn more about family planning when I probably should have talked to someone there and had all my eggs in one basket.
I think genetic counselors are definitely underutilized. I love that this industry is starting to really have a boom within that field. And I think it's important if you are going to do testing to talk to one, and not just anyone, but one that is familiar, extremely familiar with the disease you're looking for. I know that in my area, like, we have great genetic counselors. They have no clue about our specific disease. I mean, they can give me the basics and the genetics of it was passed this way, you know, certain things like that, but they can't offer that insight. And, you know, we found one outside the state of Utah that knew more about it. And I think that's what's key too, is it just, you know, you have to do your research as far as if what type of physician you're going to see. You're not going to see just any doctor. You're going to see a specialist. So you need to make sure that your genetic counselor you're talking to has some experience and specialization in the disease that you are trying to find out about, because that's a whole big game changer. And I feel like they have a really big influence on the decisions you're making for your life. And so it's got to be somebody that you can really talk to and feel free to ask questions and, you know, definitely get the information you need, because those can potentially be really life-changing decisions.
I agree 100%. And I think they are very important. And, you know, what else we could do is educate these current, whether it's undergrad or graduate students who are interested in genetic counseling, or help educate current genetic counselors so that they understand the needs of these patients or those potential patients who want to get tested, and trying to have them do their homework of understanding the disease if they aren't familiar with it, or getting the right resources for that person. I remember someone telling me that it was Shannon. Yeah, it was Shannon on our podcast about how her doctor handed her a pamphlet of information. And I think that something like that is so small, but yet so valuable, because it's the resources needed once understanding that you tested or you're diagnosed with a certain disease. But they're definitely underutilized, without a doubt. And I think it's important. People don't understand the importance of this at all. I don't need it. And then realize after the fact, like, oh, I should have went through that counseling, because it could have helped me with certain situations. It could have made it more manageable. And that's why I tell my stories, is because I'm like, hey, don't do what I did. You know, I was fortunate enough to have some good friends and to mentally just be able to live with that. But I also know people who didn't have that same mindset and really struggled with it. And some of them today still struggle with it, and it's tough. And I wish there's more I could do, but that's kind of why I share my story and my thoughts of, hey, this is what you should do, but I'm not telling you what you have to do, but here are my reasons.
Right.
Why.
And I think that there's a lot to consider as far as getting the testing done. Like, how do you handle that information? I know we talked last time with Rochelle about this. And I know, like, when I got tested and found out I was positive, which meant I had passed it down to Ethan, I mean, I was beside myself. Like, I felt like the worst mother. I had all this horrible guilt. I still feel like that. I know that that's not what it means, but there's still always going to be that spot in my heart and in the back of my mind that is like, you know, when I'm watching them, I mean, like last week, that took 4 IV sticks to get his IV in. And there's a part of me that's like, this is my fault, you know, which I know realistically it's not, but I don't think it's hard to get over that. And I think that's something you need to be prepared for as a parent, testing your, you know, if you have a child with a genetic condition and you're getting tested, are you capable to handle that information if it comes from you, you know, because I was not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably one of the reasons why I didn't want to tell my family, because for some reason my 20-year-old mindset thought that they're going to slip it to my mom. My mom's already suffering. I don't want her to feel that guilt. That's
sure.
Guilt to she's already suffering. And again, I guess my thought was, no, I'm not selfish. I'm just trying to protect my family from having to worry about me, because everyone's already worrying about my mom. But eventually I did tell them, because I knew it was the right thing to do, and I knew that they would understand and realize that, I don't know, that they just were more supportive. And it's been great to see all the help and support from family out there.
I really like that. And I was just thinking as you were talking about how the other aspect is to take into consideration. So I actually, so I guess I've been tested 4 years ago. But I didn't tell Ethan I tested positive until just earlier this year. And it only was because he's at a point with his mind and his science, you know, I mean, he's so driven into going into genetics that we were talking about different things and like incomplete penetrance and different stuff like that. And I brought it up in a very scientific, clinical manner, you know, like, and,
yeah,
but I remember when I first found out, I didn't want him to know. There was very few people I told, and I didn't want him to find out, because I know his little heart would be worried about his mom getting sick, you know? So I was like, I'm not even going to tell you I have this, because I know you'll be concerned about me, and I don't care. I'm not concerned, so I don't want you to worry. But I mean, I think that's one of those things to take in consideration too, is like you said, you grew up really fast. And I think even these little kids at 5 and 10 and 16, they do have old souls, because they grow up really quick, and they might be only 10 years old, but they understand the meaning of what's behind it. And so there's just so many factors to consider when you're looking at the testing. I mean, there's obviously price, which is just, that could be a whole nother discussion, because I've got issues with that. But yeah, you know, just the mentality and the emotional aspects of getting tested are so huge. And there's no right or wrong answer. You and I both agree with that. It's just so personal, but so many things to consider.
Yeah, and it's definitely interesting that you mentioned that you just told Ethan about it, because that's also, again, another debate for people, is who should know your information. Because what happens if I eventually had kids and I didn't tell them, and then later on they had kids? You know, there's been cases that have occurred saying like, oh, you know, it's my right as a child to know that my parent had this illness, because now that I didn't know this, it was hidden from me, that it's causing, you know, now my kids are at risk. So it is tough, because again, I mean, there are people who are like, oh, when should I tell my kids, or how do I tell my kids? And I think that's another challenging situation, is how do you tell them, and how are they going to react, and what resources do you give them?
Well, and also with kids to consider, okay, so obviously Ethan was tested because he needed to be tested for a diagnosis. My girls have no clinical reasoning to get tested. And one of the things that I came to just finally made the decision for me was just that I'm testing them. If I test them, it's for my own knowledge. And really, do they want to know that as well? And within our disease, one of the triggers can be pregnancy and childbirth. And so I just made the decision that when they are old enough and they're in that stage of life, if they want to get tested, then they can. Because I felt, I kind of, you know, after talking to people, I thought, I'm almost taking away their right by testing them. Maybe they don't care. Maybe not everyone wants to be tested. And even within a specific disease like ours, that it's a 50-50 chance, if you will. Maybe they're not so worried about it as much as I was worried about it at the time. And so it's just one other aspect. But I also see the reasoning of me as a parent. I wanted to know so that every time they did throw up, I was like, what is happening? What is this? But also, so side note tangent is this is why it's important to have a good care team and a good, so like yep. Our pediatrician, I have told, I mean, we've seen the same pediatrician for 14 years, right? I told him he's not allowed to retire until my youngest is like well over the age of not being able to come to a pediatrician. But we've had this discussion, and I mean, he knew that even when my daughter turned 8, which was the age Ethan got sick, like we were at her well check and he was like, he could see me being antsy. And so as we were walking out, he was like, what's going on? And I'm like, she's just turned 8. Like, this is the same, like, I'm kind of getting nervous because this is the same time, you know, at everything going on. And he was really good to kind of talk me through it. But from that conversation, when my girls do get sick, and we're very careful not to like over rush them to the doctor because we kind of know now what is quote normal and what's not. But when, if there is mm-hmm. something that makes me a little bit more panicky, like if it's taking a little bit longer, he's so great to just like walk in. I don't need an appointment, and he'll give them like a once over check. You know what I mean? Kind of thing, just to kind of help reassure. Yes, it's just the flu. Yes, it's just this, you know, type of thing. So I think that's just another aspect of, we didn't get tested, but we have a team of people that are aware of the possibility. And so they're easy to work with if something presents that may or may not look like this, a disease symptom.
Yeah. And I think it's important to have that team, that knowledgeable team, that team that just truly cares about the patient
yeah.
and the family. Because when you don't have that, it just makes it more complicated. It's more frustrating. People are yelling at each other, where if you have someone that just shows that they care and that they're in it for the patients, it just makes a whole difference. Just like you said, and just like my mom's neurologist, who just truly cares about his patients. And I always recommend people to go see him, whether they're interested in getting tested or that they found out that their parent has it, just because I think he's the best of the best. And I'm confident in saying that him and his team are the rock stars, because they just care about their patients and they're in it to the end. They're not like, hey, okay, our time's up. It's like, hey, I might be 15 minutes over, but I'm going to make sure I handle this situation
right,
and figure
right.
it out.
That's such a great doctor.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And you need to have, again, that genetic counselor who's knowledgeable. And that's kind of why I'm hoping to continue to share my story. I think same with you, just because if we can educate the medical professionals, and not saying, hey, we know it better than you, but hey, here's a different angle, here's a different perspective by looking at the patient or caregiver perspective. I think it goes a long way in saying, hey, how can we
yeah.
work together to learn?
Well, wouldn't it be nice if there was this team approach to giving a diagnosis? You know what I mean? It's like when your doctor gives you your test results back, it's maybe in the presence with a genetic counselor. You know what I mean? So you almost have that immediate support, and or at least the resource of here's your test results. Please call, you know, we've already set you up an appointment, or, you know, just something so that you are not trying to find on your own. Because if this is brand new to you, you don't know who to call. I mean, you just look somebody up online, Google somebody, you know what I mean? So it'd be nice if they could recommend with you.
Ghostbusters.
Call Ghostbusters, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, when in doubt, call Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it would just, but, oh gosh. Yeah, I don't know. In our dream world, it would all be this big, like, team effort when making a diagnosis and immediately starting support, along with giving information about the disease and organizations that exist to serve those communities. That's always my biggest thing.
Yeah, I mean, so within the Huntington's disease community, they have these Center of Excellences, which have that team that you're talking about. And what they're supposed to do is, yes, you talk to the genetic counselor, you talk to the neurologist, both pre-testing and when you get your results, you get it from them so that they're there to answer any questions. And then what they're supposed to do is also follow up afterwards. Or in my case, what I think is a good idea is not only do you follow up, but then you also say, hey, feel free to follow up even if it's years after. I'm happy to help, because everyone has, you know, a different timetable of when they're going to truly accept the diagnosis. Sure. But that's what that's what I think all genetic testing protocol should be, is you have that professional team, and then you have your support group, whether it's your friends or family or both, and that they're there pre-testing as well as post-testing. And it should be the same people who are going to be there for both times or both visits. And
I think with Huntington's, it's a little bit different in that it's a more of a well-known disease as far as it's been, you know, you have centers of excellence. And so for some of these smaller groups that don't have that, I feel like this is where it's important for those patient advocacy groups to even create their own resource list of knowledgeable clinicians and genetic counselors, so that when somebody is diagnosed, their doctor may not know who to send them to, but the organization can connect them to the proper people.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's just as important as, you know, here's like a list of organizations, or here's a list of resources. And it's tough, because again, sometimes I feel like we're asking for too much, because there's so many different rare diseases, as we know, and then a lot of them are genetic diseases. And so, you know, should a medical professional know every single one? Maybe not, but once they figure out the test results, at least being prepared to give them the results and say, here are your resources, like doing a little extra homework on their end.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a tough debate. I mean, a lot of these things, it can go either way, but ultimately I think that's why going through someone who's educated and knowledgeable about this, both a neurologist and genetic counselor, makes the process a lot more manageable. And it makes, at least, you know, when I talk to a professional within the HD community, it just makes me feel more comfortable. It makes me feel like, okay, I hear my options. This is how I go about it.
No, and that's important, because I think, you know, you get into genetics, it's such a huge decision to make that affects not only you, but so many people around you and future. It's not decisions to be made lightly. So, my gosh, I think this is something we could talk about for like 6 hours.
We probably could. I mean, I think the interesting thing is I love having these dialogues, these conversations, because I always learn something new, a different perspective, and everyone's not going to agree, but you should be able to agree to disagree in a friendly way.
Sure. And I would hope from this that people will keep talking about it. And like, I mean, I'm really interested to see what everyone else's perspectives are. I mean, this is my opinion that I've come to, which doesn't mean anything. I would really like to know what other people think, because it might, you know, even change what I feel about certain things, or give me an option that I don't know about. So there's so many good perspectives out there. I think it's just important to get the conversation going and then let everybody chime in and share theirs as well.
Yeah, it only starts with one person, or in our case, two people, to get the conversation going. So hopefully people continue this, and whether they reach out to us or they reach out to others and just connect and learn from one another.
Sure. Well, I'm excited to talk to the genetic counselor for our next one, because I think that will be really helpful and answer a lot of questions that a lot of people have.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's kind of why I thought this was valuable, to kind of discuss it and dive into it from our perspective, and now take a genetic counselor's perspective, hear their thoughts, see if it is similar to what we think or if it's different, and kind of discuss it and have a conversation about it.
Because what do I know, Seth? Not much. I'm just chatting. Stop. Blah blah blah. What I think. No,
I think it's important. It's important. So I'm glad that we had this discussion, and I hope people can reach out to us. And like I said, there's no question that's too personal at this point in my life.
For sure. I know. I'm gonna be like keep thinking of all these other questions too. Like, oh, I forgot to ask him about that. So when you start getting texts from me at like 11 o'clock at night, you'll be like, oh my gosh, Ann, stop. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm just hoping it has to do with that and not texts about, hey, I had this great idea about the speed dating.
Oh, conference. Yes. Well, that's a whole nother topic. Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. Hey, well, it's good to chat with you.
Yes, always great chatting. And
the podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.